Arise, shine, for your light has come. The glory of the Lord has shone upon you, are the words from the prophet Isaiah. And in this season, of course, of Christmas and Epiphany, our hearts turn to that. We think about the glory, the brightness that is born among us, that shines upon us even now. Over this season of driving around, because that's what so far my new year, my 2026 has been, driving from place to place to visit people, which has been lovely. It's been really good to do. But one of the things I've really noticed is brightness as I've been all around the place, because brightness seems to be there whether you're in the day or in the dark. In the daytime, the sun has been lovely, hasn't it? The sun's been shining on us. It's been beautiful. It's been cold, very cold this morning, but very lovely. Have you tried driving in it? Oh my goodness. Driving home to my family in Dorset on Christmas morning, the sun was low. It was right in my eyes. Driving home into the brightness of the sunshine felt dangerous, honestly, a little bit dangerous. Beautiful, but not great. At night, are we enjoying the LEDs, the headlights? Because I'm not. Not at all. They're not on my car, but they seem to be on everybody else's. And as soon as somebody puts their main beam on, I can't see anything. And you realise, the thing that I really realise driving around with all of this light shining into my car, is how dirty my windscreen is. Because it picks up everything. And you realise just how much you need to do. The glory of the Lord is shining upon you. How does it feel to be shone upon? Sometimes it can feel a little bit overwhelming, a little bit too bright. I can't really see where I'm going, what is happening, and oh my goodness, I feel like I need to be cleaner. All seem to be things that are going on. That, of course, is not what we're talking about when we're talking about the glory of the Lord. That word glory is often used in conjunction with light, with brightness, because that's a very powerful symbol, isn't it? We use the symbol of light in darkness because that is the thing that shows us things when it's not shining right in our eyes. It shows us what the world is like, and we connect this idea of light with the idea of glory. But the Hebrew word for glory is kabod, and it doesn't mean so much light or brightness, which it seems to, I think, often for us. It means more like weighty, significant, real. Those are the things that glory means. When the Old Testament, when the prophets, when all of those people talk about the glory of the Lord, they are talking about the weight of his presence and the realness and the power of that. And it's less about the light, the sparkles, if you like. These days, I think sometimes the idea of glory has become a little bit watered down. And I wonder if the way we use it, or the way that it kind of pings in our minds, makes us think more of glamour than of glory. A superficial thing, a shiny thing on the top that doesn't necessarily mean anything underneath. Glory, of course, is the opposite of that. Glory is everything that is underneath, the weight and the power of it. Now, when we think about this story of the visitation of the Magi, it can feel sometimes to us a little bit childish, I think. We hear this story and we think, oh, that sounds just like a fairy tale. Where is the weight? Where is the realness when we hear this story? My younger sister, and she's not that much younger than me, which is why I feel slightly embarrassed that she's on TikTok and I'm not. I don't know how to work it. It's not really my speed. But anyway, she was telling me how on TikTok, there were all of these videos coming out around the season of Christmas of people explaining why the Christmas story was wrong, or rather, why certain things couldn't have happened, or that the contradictions within them. So, for example, all of the things that we usually assume. First of all, the nativity story only in two Gospels, not in all four, only in two. Those two stories don't entirely mesh. They overlap a little bit, but they don't tell exactly the same story. The wise men, not kings. They're not called kings, not anywhere. Are there three of them? Well, no, there's probably a lot more. We just think three because those are the number of gifts. Where are they from? What is happening in this story? There's all of these kind of contradictions, bits where we think, oh, this feels a little bit unreal. And it can get down to the level of, well, does it seem a little bit too supernatural? Here is Matthew talking about dreams and talking about a star moving across the sky. Isn't that a little bit weird? Isn't that just some nice kind of fanciful sparkles, a bit of glamour, if you like, over the top of a story? And what I'd like us to do this morning is to dig into the story of the Epiphany a little bit more, kind of as an apologetic exercise. Apologetics is where you make an argument for something. And I think many of us might have maybe not seen on TikTok. I think our average age probably doesn't make for many TikTok viewers. But for those conversations that we have with people where they say, oh, isn't it weird that the Nativity only shows up in two Gospels? Or isn't it weird that Matthew's got all of this stuff going on with wise men and they don't show up in Luke? What's going on with that? It would be good for us to have answers. It would be good for us to access the weight and the realness that is going on in this story. So let's dig into it a little bit. First of all, is it weird that we only have the Nativity in two of our Gospels? No, not really. The wonderful thing about the Gospels is that they are from different places. They are written by different people and they are doing different things. What would be really suspicious is if we had four exact copies of the same thing. Instead, we have four people who have access to different people to talk to. They've heard different stories. They've had different things written down that they're using as a source. They have different things to tell us. And these people are making decisions. They are making decisions about what they want to tell people, about what they think is important in the story of Jesus, that it's important for people to know and be changed by. At the beginning of John's Gospel, he says really clearly, I am writing this so that you may believe in Jesus Christ. At the beginning of Luke's Gospel, he says, I'm writing this, dear lover of God, dear Theophilus, might be an actual name, might be a description of people who want to know God. I'm writing this for you as a history so that you can know all of the details that I can access so you can have the knowledge that you need to know about Jesus. In Matthew's Gospel, what Matthew wants to do is to say to us, all of this wonderful story is connected back. None of this is God acting strangely or capriciously in the world. It has been planned always and forever from before the foundation of the world. God has planned for and has pointed towards this moment, towards the coming of the Messiah. That's what Paul is talking about in his letter to the Ephesians. This wonderful news that has been hidden before in God is now made manifest to you, so that you may know the glory of God, the realness, the weight, the significance of God and all that he has to share with us. This is what he wants to do. And in Matthew, you'll notice again and again and again, he says, this happened so that it may be fulfilled what was written in the prophet. You'll notice it. There's lots of times that he does it. He does it a lot here in the beginning of his gospel because he's making a point. He's making an argument as well. He's saying, all of you who have been raising questions about whether Jesus of Nazareth really is the Messiah, whether he really was sent by God, whether he really was the Son of God, let me answer those questions. And he's arguing. The beginning of his gospel is an argument. And the things that he is including are making that argument. That's why he's including what he's including. That's not to say that these things are untrue or that he made them up. What we are saying is that he included them because he wants to say something. And what he wants to say is that God has planned this always and forever. And he references, you'll notice he references back to the prophet, the words of the prophet. The prophet is Micah. Micah in chapter 5, verse 2 has this quote, but he's melded it. Matthew's intermingled it a little bit with the words of Samuel from 2 Samuel 5, 2, where Samuel talks about anointing David to be a shepherd over his people Israel. That's why Bethlehem is so important. Bethlehem is the city of David. Bethlehem was where David was anointed king. And that's where all of the Jewish people thought the Messiah had to come from. He must come from the city of David. They must come from Bethlehem. Matthew knows Jesus is known as Jesus of Nazareth. He's not Jesus of Bethlehem, so he has to tell the story. Let me make the argument. He wasn't born in Nazareth, he was born in Bethlehem. Let me tell you about it. Why is it that we have this visitation of the Magi? Magi, not kings, Magi. Why do we think they're kings? Why do we tell a story why they're kings? Well, that's because of other connections that are there in the Old Testament. In Psalm 72, we hear about the riches of the nations being brought to Jerusalem to recognize the power of God. It's kings who bring them in Psalm 72. It's being connected up. The story of people, important people, coming and bringing gifts to recognize the glory of God in Israel, the Gentiles learning about God and his plan for the world. That's there in Isaiah. It's there in Micah. It's there throughout the Old Testament. And Matthew is saying, this happened. Look at this really clear example of this happening. Is he making up a story to be able to tell that? Well, I don't think so, because if he was, he would never have chosen Magi to be the people doing it. Magi were not people with a great reputation in Jewish or in Christian society. They were regarded as magicians, astrologers, dabblers in the occult. When the word Magi is used elsewhere in the New Testament, it's not very flattering. It's used for false prophets, for magicians, for sorcerers. You wouldn't choose Magi to be the first people to recognize who Jesus is, unless that was a thing that happened. The star. Is it weird? Is it strange? Is it too supernatural? I mean, God is God. He has power over all things. Would it be strange to say God has done something extraordinary? Not really. What about all the rest of the miracles? What about the resurrection, for goodness sake? God does extraordinary things. But there's also some really interesting evidence that shows that there might have been bright lights in the sky leading people from the east to the west around that period. In 7 BC, there was a conjunction, there was a planetary conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn in the constellation of Pisces, which was noticed, which was written about. That would be a sign of a king being born in the Westlands. In Pisces, the constellation of Pisces means the last days. It could be appointed to that. People talk about it. That was in 7 BC. In 4 BC, there was a supernova. Chinese astronomers write about this supernova that was bright in the sky, that was up there for 70 days in 4 BC, just before the death of Herod the Great, the Herod that's mentioned in this story. Could these have been the bright light? Could these have been the way in which God told his people about the coming of his Messiah? Entirely possible, yes. All of these things are leading us to the weight and the reality of this story. When we start digging into it, we can begin to see that there is more to this than just a fun story about people dressed up with funny crowns on in the nativity play. More is happening here. And why is it important that we realize the realness that underlies this? It's because this is where our faith comes from and where it moves to. Being able to live in this world not doubting the stories that we receive, that we have in our scriptures, that teach us about God and about Jesus, that we know that they are deep and powerful and weighty in our lives and in the lives of others. The glory of the Lord that shines upon us isn't just that brightness, that glamour, that sparkle from above. It is a deep, weighty, heart-deep reality for us. And that glory shines in our hearts. That's the words that Paul uses. The glory of the Lord now shines in our hearts. That weight, that strength that sits deep in our core, knowing that these stories aren't just sparkles. There is something powerful and important happening here. And if we allow ourselves to dig a little bit deeper, then we can find out just how much weight these may carry for us. Don't be ashamed of the stories that we tell and retell around this period. Don't feel that they're childish, because they are not. There is power here for us to recognize and learn and talk about. May your faith be strengthened. May the glory of the Lord dawn in your heart and shine upon you. And may you know that strength and that weight in your step today. Amen.